Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lara on WNYC. You can sign up for our podcast at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lara Show. You can download the program and listen to it for free and at your convenience every day. WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lara Show to subscribe to the podcast. And it's time to meet Ed Viesters. To some of you, that name is unfamiliar. And to those of you who know a little bit about mountain climbing, that name is king. Ed Viesters was the first American to ascend all 14 of the world's 8,000-meter peaks, one of only 18 people ever to do so, and only the sixth to do it without bottled oxygen. And if you're not a climbing enthusiast, you might know Ed Viesters as the guy who got roped into promising Stephen Colbert that he would plant a flag with his logo on it at the top of Mount Everest, a promise he kept earlier this year when he summited Everest for the seventh time. Ed Viesters has a new book out now about his life as a mountain climber, and more specifically about K2, the world's second tallest but most dangerous mountain. Ed Viesters, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And listeners, we don't have much time for calls, but if you've ever climbed K2 or one of the world's 14 8,000-meter peaks, give us a call right now. We've got a place for you. Bound to be someone out there who's done it. 212-433-9692. And Ed, we scheduled this interview several weeks ago, as you know, but it's impossible to chat about this topic today without bringing up the fact that word comes down that the search for two missing climbers on Mount Hood in Oregon was suspended yesterday afternoon. It's now officially being handled as a recovery, not a rescue effort. Here is a clip of David Nolan, father of one of the missing climbers, Katie Nolan. Take a listen.
One of the comments that her roommate had was that Katie loved the mountains so much that she would like to be buried up there, and right now she is.
What do you think about when you hear stories like this in the headlines?
The fact, well, you know, I wouldn't mind being buried in the mountains, but that's after I live a long life here at sea level. You know, I never wanted to die in the mountains. I never wanted to risk my life to that level. I enjoyed mountain climbing. I still do, but I always thought the art of mountaineering was to manage the risk in a way that ultimately at the end of the day you get home. And a lot of people, though, I don't know if we're misinterpreting what she said, but there are people that I've met along the way that were willing to risk their lives for the sake of a summit. And I just simply couldn't comprehend that. I mean, I didn't even want to get frostbite and lose a finger. But some people are willing to pay different prices for success, and that's something that you have to decide as an individual.
And John Vietti, whose son Anthony is also missing on Mount Hood today, comes from a deeply religious background. Take a listen to something that he said during the press conference yesterday.
Though I'm involved in ministry, my closest connection to God is in nature and on the mountaintop experiences.
And Ed Viesters, you write a lot about the spiritual and religious element of climbing. Do those words resonate with you?
Well, you know, for me, the reason I go into the mountains was for self-satisfaction and to push my limits. But there's times through my career where I felt some spiritual happening. You know, the Sherpa that I've met a number of times in Nepal, they see mountains as entities, and the mountains are part of their lives, part of their cultures, and they respect the power of not only nature but of the mountains. And I think what I learned from them is to go into the mountains with humility. You know, we don't conquer them. And I think if we go into the mountains with a good attitude and with a humble attitude, we make better decisions, and ultimately somehow we're allowed then to climb these mountains.
Is the mental side of climbing more difficult than the physical?
It's equally as important. I mean, you physically have to be ready to do this endurance event, but once the going gets really tough, then it's the mental part of it that pushes you to places that you might never have gone before. And that's when we have the saying, you pay the currency of toil. You have to be willing to struggle. You have to be willing to suffer a little bit to gain the summit of a lot of these mountains. But it's breaking through that is when you achieve that goal. It's very satisfying, and it becomes very addictive as well.
What has that taught you about focus? Do you think about the mountain as a whole, or is it really just the next step in front of you?
You have to think about just the next step in front of you. If you look at the mountain as a whole or whatever project you're doing, it's almost overwhelming. And you just say, there's no way. I can't do that. It's impossible. But if you break it down into sections, into what I have to do today, and then that day is broken down into individual steps, and that's how you overcome these huge obstacles, by breaking it down into smaller obstacles.
Your book is called K2, Life and Death on the World's Most Dangerous Mountain. Again, very resonant today considering the Mount Hood tragedy. And you highlight the six most dramatic seasons in K2's history, 1938, 39, 53, 54, 86, and just last year, 2008. Why is K2 so dangerous, and what made last year so dramatic?
Well, I think it's dangerous because of what it is and what people are willing to do to climb K2, more so than on Everest. You know, Everest is the highest, but it's not as technically difficult, whereas for a lot of climbers, we see K2 as more of the holy grail. Wow, that would be the ultimate test piece for me to climb. And so I think when people go to K2, you know, they're so enamored with pushing for success, they're maybe willing to break the rules that they've kept for a long time in their climbing career, or they're willing to make decisions based more on success than survival. And that's why you tend to have a lot more problems. And K2 in itself is very unforgiving. You know, the weather is unpredictable, the terrain is very steep and technical, and you throw all that into one big mixing bowl, and you tend to have more problems that therefore on this mountain.
And the weather was especially harsh in 08?
Well, it wasn't really the factor of the weather. It was a freak act of nature where part of this ice glacier, this ice cliff, broke off, and it swept away the fixed hand lines that the climbers had used on their ascent and were relying on for their descent. And when the hand lines were gone, a lot of the climbers who were already almost beyond their limit simply didn't have either the strength or the ability or the technical experience to descend without that hand line. So one thing started this snowball effect, which ultimately, you know, in the end, 11 people died, either directly or indirectly because of that incident.
Wow, just last year.
Yes.
Do you see evidence of global warming scaling these peaks?
You do. I mean, and in particular, in the Alps, for instance, in the summer, where we used to be able to climb a lot of these mountain faces that were even in the summer covered with snow and ice permanently, that snow and ice is no longer there. And by traveling to a lot of these countries where you're talking to locals that have lived in particular areas, let's say, you know, the Canadian Arctic, where I've traveled to, where they have seen through their lives these changes. You know, when we go to visit, we're there for maybe 3 months or so. We don't see the direct effects because on a scale of time, that's very small. But if you go year after year, decade after decade, and speak to people, there is definite evidence of some sort of climate change.
All right. If you're willing, let's play a little cold weather tips lightning round, okay? Short questions, short answers. My guest, Ed Viesters, the world's probably greatest living mountain climber. His book is called K2, Life and Death on the World's Most Dangerous Mountain. Gloves or mittens?
Mittens.
Wool socks or synthetic socks?
Wool socks.
Layers or one big heavy coat?
Layers.
Does chapstick actually do anything?
Yes, it does. It protects you from wind, and it keeps the moisture in your skin.
What's the best way to warm your hands?
Either stick them under your own armpits or your partner's armpits.
We have a producer on the show who spins his arms in a circle when his fingers are cold to get the blood flowing to his fingers. Ever heard of that technique?
Yeah, that'll work. That'll work. But you got to try to, if you can, stick them somewhere warm as well.
Are you at a point where your cold sensors have completely reset? Do you not get cold until it's really, really cold?
Probably, yeah. I'm willing to deal with more cold. But part of that is due to the fact that if you have the right gear and if you're moving, you're creating heat and you're insulating that with the equipment that you're wearing.
Why wool over synthetics for socks?
Wool just has properties that no synthetic has yet been able to match. You know, it's warm when it's wet. Your skin can tell that it's a natural fiber. I'm a wool guy. On my head and on my feet, it's got to be wool.
And I'm sure you know the famous story of when George Mallory was asked by a New York Times reporter in 1923, the big cliche, why he wanted to climb Mount Everest, and his answer was, because it's there. Is that your answer, too?
No. The answer is if you have to ask, you'll never know.
If you have to ask, you'll never know. What does that mean?
Well, it means that you either get it or you don't. And for us as climbers, it's a very hard thing to explain. And I could spend days and days and days explaining it to somebody, and still at the end of the conversation, they'll go, I still don't get it. So, it, you know, it's a hard thing. And Mallory probably had been asked that question so many times, he just said, you know what, leave me alone. Because it's there. For him, it was a simple way to answer the question, and then people were still going, okay, I think I get it, but I don't really get it.
So you took Stephen Colbert's flag to the top of Everest. Will you carry a WNYC tote bag with you next time you climb K2?
What color is it?
It's black with beautiful red trim.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't plan to go back to Everest again.
Or K2. Maybe on K2.
Okay.
Or to the gym. That would do. You can
I'll take it to the gym.
Ed Viester's book is called K2, Life and Death on the World's Most Dangerous Mountain. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, and Shubha Bala produced this program. We had intern help today from Mary Beth Holman. And our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer.